For the fans, by the fans, this is the Non-League Football Show, and I'm Tim Fuel, and this is the start of another weekly look at the world of non-league football. It's another busy week of non-league cup football. The FA Trophy and the FA Vars reached the second qualifying round this weekend. We speak to what must be one of non-league's longest serving managers, Phil Powell, in his seventh season as gaffer at Brighouse Town. Former trophy winner as a player, he knows the magic of the competition as his club prepare for a home tie against fellow Step 4 opposition. Helping with the insight of the 340-odd clubs in this weekend's FA Vars second qualifying round, it's Phil Annetts, back again, this time with his at FA Vars fact file hat on. Rounding it all up, it's John Couch, executive editor at the Non-League paper, with the news of the week from the world of non-league and a heads up on the issues to be covered in this week's non-league paper. Before all that, though, another old friend of the show kicks the show off. After a successful first stint in management at Banbury, Andy Wing flew the nest in the summer and ended up with some old friends close to home at Solihull Moors. The only unbeaten side in the top of non-league this season. 10 games in, they sit second in the table. And whilst realistic, Wing seems relaxed and confident. They're ready to continue the same form for the rest of the season. An insightful show, so sit back, relax, and let's get matters underway. So that magic 10-game mark is upon us, or at least upon those in the National League. And my first guest is no stranger to the show. And when he took on the new challenge in the summer, we knew he'd be more than up to the task. And 10 games in, and the only side in the top tier unbeaten, that only goes to show that he knows what he's doing. To find out more, it's a warm welcome back to the Non-League Football Show. Manager at Solihull Moors, Mr. Andy Wing. Welcome back, Andy.
Hi, mate. Hope you're well.
I'm good, and I'd imagine you are as well. You left Banbury in May in search for a full-time role in football, and within a month, you're in this new role as head coach at Solihull Moors in the top tier of non-league. When you left Banbury, was it your intention to take a bit of time out first before jumping straight back in? Because you had a fairly intense couple of years there.
Yeah, no, not at all. I think one of the main reasons was I just felt, obviously, the time that I'd taken the club as far as I could. It was a really successful period, and I just felt I didn't want it to kind of this season tarnish that. And then obviously my next day and then was kind of get back into to a full-time football club, and really, really fortunate to get the call from Solihull Moors, from Darryl, the chairman, just sort of at the start of pre-season, really, when everyone's going back in. Obviously there's a change of manager there, and I spoke to him, and I'm from the area. I live around the corner. He just fell on my lap perfectly for me. To be fair,
yeah, we tend to talk about the planets aligning, and it sort of yeah. did there. And I know you mentioned Darryl there that and there's a couple of old faces you've known for years behind the scenes at Solihull. Has that helped you settle in quicker?
Yeah, massively. I think obviously when I retired, from professional football at, quite young, 31, Darryl was the chairman at Oxford United, and there's other people behind the scenes who have followed him now from Oxford to Solihull Moors. And yeah, it was brilliant. Obviously I knew the chairman. I knew obviously a lot of faces behind the scenes. Stephen Ward came in at the same time as me as well, as director of football, who's been brilliant, and it kind of our like sort of philosophies and the way we want to go about things is kind of aligned as well, which has been really helpful, to start of, it's my first obviously job as a full time manager in a professional environment, so it's been brilliant to have those people around me to bounce ideas off.
And for a club that's built so well in recent years and gone so close to success, what sort of targets were you set as a new head coach?
I think it was after a difficult year, and I just, 2 years ago, just missing out in the playoffs to Grimsby, and then lost a lot of players, haven't they, last season, in terms of, they've all gone to, probably a victim of their own success, really, in terms of losing a lot of their best players. Two days in the door, we lost our captain, went to York. But at the same time, it was quite good in a way where we could kind of, we had a meeting and we kind of changed structure a little bit and how we want to go and approach things. It was kind of a clean slate, really. And how we've recruited then, we recruited to that plan basically, and so far it's worked. Still a lot of work to do, obviously, but I think the main thing was just go and compete. I don't think there's any sort of set parameters. You know, go and compete. Hopefully, top end of the table or top half of the table would be nice. But just go and compete. Bring smiles back on faces, and that's what hopefully we're doing at the moment.
Yeah, and Solihull was always a club that I keep a close eye on because when they merged as a club, the same sort of end close season as my own club, Hayes and Yedding United, and we played them in a pre-season friendly as the newly merged club. So I've always kept an eye on them, and now you know they've been full time for a while. And this is your first year as a full time manager. What's the biggest difference? Is it the access to resources, be that personnel or facilities, or is it just other minds that you can tap into?
I think absolutely everything what you've just said there, really. Last year, I'm doing three jobs. I'm working in a warehouse. I'm trying to watch games, and it just becomes impossible, really, at times. And you know, I take my hat off to every manager, coach that does that in the non-league, because it's pretty relentless, really. So just having that time to plan, staff to delegate things as well, so it's not all on your sort of shoulders. Whereas last year, it's kind of you did everything yourself. And you know, when things weren't going so well, you know, you took the brunt of that, you took it home and everything. So, you know, I think work-life balance is brilliant for me now. I just feel more comfortable and confident going into training, into games, because we feel like we've done our homework. Our recruitment plan is been brilliant as well so far. I think it's just that time to kind of delegate things and prepare properly for games, really. I think that's the biggest thing. And I know it's a cliche, but I'm actually it's living the dream. For four or five years it's been in a warehouse on my own, throwing sofas around, whereas now I'm a full-time football manager, so all good, mate.
All good indeed. I mean, you obviously have your own way of playing, but I was speaking with another manager in the National League this week offline, and we were talking about these various sports documentaries that swamp us now on every platform possible. And we're talking about the American football ones and all the playbooks, their various calls, their moves, etc. We've always had various set pieces, etc. But he was saying that non-league is becoming much more planned, much more scientific.
Yeah, absolutely. You've got top managers, top coaches in the league. You only have to see Gateshead's goal the other night, which is absolutely unbelievable. I thought that some of the comments were disrespectful in terms of what the non-league offers. I think people just expect everyone to smash it and boom it and land on second balls. But I think it's getting some fantastic coaches, as I've said. Mm. Set pieces. It's a big thing in terms of, where can you go and score a goal from? So everyone's, delving into that. Everyone, I think, with Y-Scout or sort of Huddle and all them kind of things that people watch now, everyone's a lot more well-prepared. And you have to be prepared, and you have to try and do things a little bit out of the box to go and win football matches now, because everyone, as I said, are well-prepared and well-drilled.
And is that why we've got a different breed of manager nowadays? You're back in the olden days, it was whoever shouted loudest was probably the most successful manager. And now you must have to have a plan A, a plan B, through to plan Z. And it's sort of you have to react calmly on the touchline.
Yeah, a little bit. I think there's still a little bit of, obviously, you want to get your points across. And if you're not doing that, I'm sure myself or a few managers will let people know. But like, as I said, there's some fantastic managers and coaches in this division, who I respect massively for what they do. So we have to be really, really well prepared to get anything from these games, because we know every game is going to be difficult. Obviously everyone's, pretty much professional in the league, a little bit different to obviously the North and the South. So you have to be prepared to mix it up and get results, really.
And you know, going back to your start here, much of your success at Banbury was built on being mean in defence, and already that's clearly a strength of your new side, being the only unbeaten side in the National League. And you conceded just 9 in 10 games. That's got to be pleasing.
Yeah, absolutely. I think I've learnt a lot in terms of, you know, 2 years ago in the Southern League, Banbury, you know, because we were pretty much, we had the better players than everyone else, really, as we thought. You know, we were able to play our way out of the league. And I thought we were a bit naive, even though we had a good start last year. We tried to do the same things and were maybe a little bit naive last year in the National League North. So, yes, we have a little bit of more of a pragmatic approach, but we've still got very, very good players to go and win games of football, to go and score goals. There hasn't been a game this season yet. Touch wood that we haven't scored a goal. You know, so we're scoring goals on the other end, but as you've probably seen, we defend really well. The lads work their absolute socks off. They put their bodies on the line, which you need, especially in this league. You know, and it's coming together really nicely.
Yeah, and as you said, it's not about stacking men behind the ball. You are scoring goals too. I think Josh Kelly's already got 5 in the league. You obviously have this way of playing, but I sense you also encourage players just to be themselves.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we've got a really good environment in the football club and culture. I think the lads have been absolutely fantastic in taking on information. You know, the biggest thing for me is, you know, I needed a good start for people and players to probably trust me. You know, being a new manager, young manager, you know, a lot would say inexperienced, but, you know, I've played the game for 20 odd years and coached for the last 7 or 8 years as well. You know, so I always had belief in what I could do, but obviously you need that sort of start for everyone else to kind of believe in you as well, which has been great. And I think that's you know, I've got to take my hats off to the players because they've been absolutely fantastic. We brought some really good experienced pros in as well who have helped, who I lean on for guidance as well. I think they're still absolutely outstanding for information. You know, we listen to them as much as they listen to us, and you know, it's been really good so far.
Yeah, and that unbeaten tag, though, is it? It's no mean feat, whoever you play today. We talk about this division in particular being so tight and every club being capable of beating one another. Are the sides you've beaten so far, do you expect them to still be up there challenging come the end of the season?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, a lot of the games are fine margins, and at the minute we're on the right side of those fine margins. You know, I can imagine that, you know, there's teams looking at some of our guys and thinking, you know, how are they doing so well? You know, they don't, even the other night I heard, well, they're not as good as us and we're sort of top end of the table and bottom end of the table. But I think that naiveness and kind of that extra bit of quality sometimes in the right moments has helped us. You know, but it's going to be tough. It's a lot tougher. We've got a game on Saturday, probably the most informed team in the league. You know, won the last 5, so we know that's going to be tough. But at the minute, we've just found a way of grinding out games of football. But still believe we can get miles better. You know, the first half last the other night, I thought we were really good, and then second half we tailed off it a bit. You know, but even like Salop Fylde, I thought they're bottom of the league, but they're a lot better than probably their position says, really. So any, like the old cliche, I think any game in this league is tough. And you know, we just keep going as and hopefully we keep picking up points and winning football matches.
Indeed. As you say, another set of tough games this week. You're at home to Bromley this weekend, currently 4th in the table and the informed team. A trip to 7th place Hartlepool United as well on Tuesday. So physically, those games are going to be tough for players, but I'd imagine mentally too.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we've got some real tough. Then we go away to York on the Saturday. So there's a lot of travelling involved in that. You know, I think the biggest thing for us is sort of giving the lads time off. But a lot, obviously, but when we're in, they take a lot of information in terms of the games. But the biggest thing is we've only got a smallish squad anyway. You know, so we have to listen to the players. If they need days off, they need rest days. You know, we don't really want them at the training ground, you know, in long periods of time, so they can go home and switch off. But when they're in, they take on information, which has done really, really well. This is a tough period for us. You know, there's a bit of cramp on Tuesday night, so we've got to, you know, we haven't really got the opportunity to mix the team around too much. So hopefully, you know, we stay injury free. I think that's the most important thing. And, you know, we can, you know, sort of pick points up through this tough period.
It's interesting you say that, because away from football and within football, I always talk about the relationship of trust. It's something that one of my late friends, Rob Peters, sort of built into me. You have to work with the people that you're working with. So you can have them in every day drilling them on the field, but they need to buy into what you're telling them, and they need to take that away as well. So you need to be able to trust them to do what they're supposed to be doing.
Yeah, 100%, I think. You know, when we first come into pre-season, there was quite a few more days off than I would have liked, so I kind of took them days off away from them. But I only did that because we knew further down the line they'd get those days back, in terms of, you know, they build their fitness up, you know, in the first few weeks of pre-season. You know, it's relentless, it's a bit of a slog, but times like this is where they kind of get those days back, you know, because they're well into games now, they're all really, really fit. Now it's just a case of maintaining and keeping injuries away, really. And like I said, it's that trust then, trust me kind of in pre-season. And now they kind of reap the benefits of that in terms of, you know, the odd day off, the odd sort of rest day, recoveries and all that sort of stuff. So it's worked really well so far, and hopefully we can keep that going.
Yeah, it has worked very well. Andy Wing, really appreciate your time. Wish you the best of luck. We will keep an eye on everything and hopefully speak to you again on the Non-League Football Show very soon.
What's up, man? Thanks for having me on.
So it's a big weekend for many in cup action in non-league this Friday, Saturday and Sunday. Second qualifying round in both the FA Vars and the FA Trophy. It's a weird one with this draw having been made back in the first week of July. But we've had to wait for the first qualifying round to take place a couple of weeks back first, so that now that we know what clubs have progressed and everybody knows their opposition. So let's chat with one of those who needed 90 minutes plus some sudden death penalties to make it here. But they did. And now they have a home tie this Saturday. To tell us more, let's welcome back to the Non-League Football Show manager at Brickhouse Town, Mr. Ville Powell. Welcome back, Ville.
Good to be back. Thank you. Yeah, it's been a while, I think.
It has.
Last time I was on, but yeah.
A number of years, I think, since we last had you on. Every week, though, on this show, we talk about the non-league manager's merry-go-round, and you never come up in conversation. I suppose that's a good thing. You know, you've been at Brickhouse now, what, since 2017 when Paul Quinn departed? I sense you love the club, yeah. And the club love you as well.
Yeah. I mean, listen, I'm into my seventh season coming up. So yeah, it's mad, really, when you look at that and look at that longevity. But it's just really, it's been the fit's been good. You know, one of my remits always has been as a manager to be in an environment where there's the ability to be competitive. You know, we're not. It's never been a situation where we can, you know, be overly ambitious, but be competitive. But the main reason I've stayed so long is the hierarchy. The chairman and the committee have been so supportive of me from day one, and I feel that loyalty needs to be returned, and that's what I'm trying to do. We're trying to do something together as a committee and a club, and I'm fully committed to doing that. Obviously, you've always got ambitions as a manager, but you know it has to be the right for everybody, and for me, my loyalties lie with Brickhouse Town.
Yeah, and I think that first season as well, you flirted with relegation, shall we say. It was sort of if you were at another club, the trigger might have been pulled and we might never be having this conversation. But you say that they stuck by you.
100%, 100%. And that was just it. It was my first, you know, I was a green manager, obviously. I'd never managed before. And, you know, I'll never forget, I went for a period of 3 months without winning a football match. Which, you know, you do that at most non-league clubs. You know, you see it now and you see it at league clubs where, you know, it can be after three or four games sometimes where you're getting the bullet. But no, they stuck by me. They could see, you know, the potential in what we were doing at the time. And, you know, even during that period, it weren't a case of we were getting thumped, we were losing by the odd goal. And it was the inexperience that we had that meant that things were the way they were, and they could see that. And in the end, we managed to, I think we finished 15th that season, with a very inexperienced side, a revolving door of transfers and, well, I say transfers, but signings coming in and out. We stayed up, and then the following season, we finished third. So, and that was pretty much a similar side from the previous season. So, ever since then, we've sort of looked up rather than down. Yeah, we've been ups and downs, pandemics and bits and pieces, but you know, we've always been a consistent top 10 side at least, which is a massive achievement for a club the size of Bluegills.
Yeah, and you signed a 3-year deal, I think it was March 2022, so you're halfway through that. So
yeah.
It's a long-term deal for both parties, but I mean, how far can the club go? Is it to get up to that next level? Could the club compete there?
Yeah, I mean, that's the ambition. I mean, it was a technicality that a ridiculous technicality that we're not currently sort of operating at that, or we weren't operating in that level a couple of seasons ago before the pandemic. But you know, we felt at the time, you know, we were well suited to doing that because we do cut our cloth accordingly. And yes, there are sort of stronger teams, but what we've been really good at is our recruitment and sort of finding players or unearthing gems and, you know, establishing them as sort of top players at the level that we're operating at, and currently it's step four, and we continue to do that and find players that either discarded from others or have not really been given a chance yet, and giving them a chance and making themselves competitive. And so I really do think it's one of those things where, you know, that's where we kind of see ourselves in terms of being able to get up to the next level, at least pull ourselves up. It'll be a tough pull, but we think we can do that. You know, it's going to be difficult, whether we do it this season or it's certainly something that's within our grasp or within our ability, our capabilities. And it's just sort of, you know, getting all the ducks in a row and having that bit of luck and bit of consistency that you need to get through it. And we've done it before. So it's something we feel we can do again.
Yeah, and then lining up this weekend for the FA Trophy, Clitheroe, your visitors on Saturday. They're fourth in the NPL West. You're in the East, of course.
Yeah.
That won't be easy. But then Hebburn, who you beat last round, were the leaders of your division. So, you know, it's within your grasp, would you say?
Yeah, I mean, the thing with us, obviously, this season, it's kind of a start again season for us in terms of, you know, a lot of new faces. We've had sort of 18 new bodies through the door that have never played at this level or played men's football before even. And we're showing that, you know, again, we can be competitive and we can mix it with the best teams in the league. And we've done that so far this season. Yes, we've had some disappointing results as well, but we've had some real positive ones, as you mentioned there, and the Hebburn one we were particularly sort of proud of, just because, as I say, they were an experienced side, very strong side, playoff finalists last season, leading the league this season, and we dominated them for large parts of the game. And although it went to penalties in the end, that was really down to that little bit of game management and inexperience in the group rather than the actual performance of you know, in terms of the game. And so, you know, looking at Clitheroe Saturday, it's one of them where, you know, I always say the North West is a stronger league than the others at this level, certainly is. And the North West teams are always top teams, and Clitheroe will be no different. And, you know, but we know that if we can perform like we have done previous weeks and have the same mentality as we have done in our better games, that we'll give them a problem and hopefully get a result.
And you beat Hebburn, as I mentioned, 6-5 on penalties after that one all draw in normal time. That means beyond the five selected takers, and that probably says a lot about the mental strength of your side, even though they're young.
Yeah, they are a really good group. I mean, one of the things I've learned as a manager is to make sure you get the mentality of the players right in terms of being honest, in terms of having that sort of self-belief in regards to their own quality, but also sort of knowing that they can make mistakes and they're going to make mistakes, and that's the key thing, is knowing that, you know, they're not going to be left out in the cold just for making a mistake on a football pitch or even a couple, because they've got that inexperience. And sort of when we went into penalties, I literally, you know, put the onus on the players and didn't even really say anything to them, because there's nothing really to be said. It's about their choice and their confidence, and they showed that in the penalty shootout, and with nerves of steel, and the quality of penalties were really good.
Something I was going to ask you, because of course, FA Trophy and penalty, something of a double-edged sword for you. FA Trophy winner as a player with Greys. But I recall that someone not too far from this call had a spot kick to win the game in that shootout that didn't actually bring the glory. Thankfully, it didn't matter in the end. But was that a story maybe you've told to your team before?
No, it actually isn't. I've told not to this current squad, but I have told it previously. And it was one of them, you know. In the end, it didn't end up costing us the result or the win on the day. But yeah, it's an horrible feeling missing a penalty in such an important match. But at the end of the day, you know, I scored more penalties than I've missed. but on that day, it wasn't meant to be. So in terms of me scoring the what would have been the decisive penalty at the time, and like I say, you know, I always said, you know, as a penalty taker, it's in your favour to score, certainly. But there's always that added pressure of the environment and the occasion that can sometimes get to you. And on that day, it probably did me.
Yeah, as you say, you scored more penalties than you probably are not. Goal scoring was really your thing as a player. I keep various notes. I'm a bit of a stato on various. But am I correct in recalling you once scored more than 70 in a season when you were? And you were also the strike partner of a young Jamie Vardy at Stocksbridge Park Steel. So. You know what good breeding and what making a good striker, a good goal scorer means, I guess. So what I was going to ask was, how valuable is Mohamed Kazim to you? I think he's got 9 goals in 9 games already this term.
Yeah, I mean, that definitely. And certainly at this level and you know, the non-league level, it's sort of different attributes in a striker than there are at sort of league level and football league and as you go higher up. But at non-league level, it is literally, you know, you strike having that sort of ruthless and selfish almost mentality. You know, I always said is, you know, you'll find strike because, you know, your real goal scorers will, you know, all they want to do is score goals. You know, the first focus is, how quickly can I get towards the goal, and can I be in the right spot for an opportunity? And they're disappointed even when the team wins sometimes and they've not scored. That can be the feeling of a striker. Mo's definitely that kind of striker. I've always had a little bit of faith, a lot of faith in Mo, but a little bit of sort of, how do I put it? Sort of.
I think the best strikers frustrate that little as well, bit more.
Yes, exactly. That's what I was just going to say. Wanting that little bit more from him, because I know what his potential is. You know, he did sort of come to us at the start of last season, and I could see the potential then. And obviously, he moved on to guys like at the time. You know, after a good start with us. But what tends to happen is, you know, as you step up, and if you don't perform, and you know, you sometimes don't get that backing of other managers. And what we tend to do is not sort of lose faith in players just after, you know, if you see the potential there, the attitude, the mentality and the work rate, we tend to give them that sort of push and that sort of platform to really thrive. And that's what Mo's doing now for us. And that's why it's so important, because he's given that flat platform, he's given that backing. Yes, you know, he knows he can make a mistake and not, you know, not necessarily lose his shirt or be discarded for it, or we're looking for a replacement. And it's paying dividends through his goals and his performances.
And I think that probably says so much of you, about you as a manager, why you've been at Brighouse so long. I think I remember you telling me before that you fell into coaching almost by mistake, but you're still there. You're still clearly enjoying it. As you bring through those young players now, can you spot those amongst the players that might go on to a career in coaching?
Yeah. What, into a career in coaching? I wouldn't necessarily say a career in coaching. Just because, as I said, for me, it was, you know, it was kind of, you know, I was coming towards the end of my non-league career, and I was getting sort of asked to sort of take an amateur side at the time, and I didn't really know whether it was something I wanted to do, but I guess it's like anything, you know, if you get the bug for it, you get the bug for it, and that's what happened with me. So I think, you know, sometimes people, you know, depending on their sort of situation, circumstances, and sort of, you know, mentality towards it. They can fall into it and fall in love with it, but be rest assured there's not much money in it and it takes up a lot of your time. So it depends on, you have to be a certain type of man really to really fully get into coaching and non-league management, just because obviously it's extremely time consuming. But the benefits of, you know, seeing players kick on like your Sam Reeds, like your Aaron Martins, that have, you know, gone on to league football simply through sort of the support and environment that, you know, you've helped create and given them a platform to kick on from. That's where your buzz comes into it, along with the successes on a Saturday as well.
Yeah, and so those circumstances and the sort of the nurturing sort of environment that you're within play a big part, don't they? Because when you were a pro, you played under some big names like that. Well, late Trevor Francis, yeah. David Pleat, Ron Atkinson. Now, when you're coaching, do you notice some of their traits or their teachings being passed on by yourself, maybe without thinking?
100%. I think there's Ricky Hill that comes into that as well, because he was part of that. Yeah. And it, you know, you take little bits from all those people, and even the players. You know, even the players that were around in the environment at the time as well. How they reacted to certain things that you know, in regards to certain managers and how they reacted to certain information and you know, it's adapting your style and your personality at times to accommodate the different personalities within the group and the different experiences within the group and different levels of experience within the group as well, because that plays a factor in how you coach and how you talk to people and how you manage. So I definitely say, you know, from my, you know, how I do things, it's come from the different sort of managers I've worked under and experienced over my time in both professional football and non-league football as well.
And you've already, I mean, referenced to it there. It's a busy old time being a non-league manager. FA Trophy this weekend, that's going to go straight to penalties if level on 90. But then you're straight into league action on Monday night as well. Monday's still a fairly rare midweek choice. Is that tradition or does it help you get extra time with the players later in the week? Is it a choice?
Yeah, I mean, it's something that was implemented before I became manager at Brighouse Town, to be honest. It's been there. Sort of midweek night, because you sort of allocated which one you want, and it was done before my time. And it was one of them where, when I come into it, I did think it was a bit, you know, it was nuanced. It was a bit strange, if I'm honest. But what it allows me to do is it allows me to sort of get out, and because obviously, you know, you have to, as a non-league manager, you have to do the mileage, and unless you're very fortunate and very finance secure and backed, you've not really got a scouting network to get out and watch players or watch opposition and sort of do that mileage to get your knowledge up. So with us playing on a Monday, it allows me to do and my coaching team to do is to get out to Tuesday midweek games and Wednesday midweek games, obviously, anyway, as well. But it allows us to do that and do the mileage. But on the flip side of what we have to do is prepare the players for it, and we do that during pre-season. You know, during pre-season we put the players through what is, you know, an 8-week, 3-day week with the training on some fitness on a Monday and some tactical stuff on a Tuesday, and just get them sort of prepared for that, you know, playing on a Saturday, having to quickly recover and then do it all again on the Monday. And currently, you know, in previous seasons, it's worked really well doing that preparation. And then they get that time back during the season in regards to nights off and, you know, training less, because we've done a little bit more in pre-season. And it works. It works well. This group's taken to it quite well in terms of the physical demands of it. It benefits us to get out and get more knowledge on the opposition.
Well, long may it continue. Vil Power, it's been fantastic talking to you. I could talk to you all evening, but I better let you go and prepare for this next round of the FA Trophy. Thanks for joining us on the Non-League Football Show. We'll speak to you again soon. Good luck.
Brilliant. Thanks for your time. Cheers.
So it is the second qualifying round in both the FA Trophy and the FA Vase this weekend. As we've mentioned before, it's the 50th year of the FA Vase, so it's important we cover off all the stories of the weekend before they even happen. So let's go head to the FA Vase then, and welcome back to the Non-League Football Show, our very own FA Vase Stato. It's at FA Vase Backfile, Mr. Phil Annette. Welcome back, Phil.
It's good to be back, Tim. Hope you're well.
Yeah, it's a busy weekend. That always puts a smile on my face. 386 clubs in that last round that we mentioned there. That means that this weekend, 348 clubs in 174 ties. It's something of a doddle, that, isn't it?
Yeah, should be getting finished on my research on it after midnight on Saturday, about 2:30 probably. No, it's great. It's great. There's lots of clubs involved and lots of potential great stories around.
Yeah, 174 ties, again, spread across the weekend, seven, I think, Friday night, four to play on Sunday, the rest on Saturday. Plenty of history being made. A number of clubs in the competition for the first time, so every game for them is history, and there's a number of others already beyond their previous best.
I know, it doesn't seem likely, only in the second qualifying round, but yes, there's a few clubs who have played in the competition before who have yet to have gone beyond the first qualifying round. And obviously, not played too often, but this season sees them into the second qualifying round for the first time. Clubs like Ilkley Town and Langley and Lewisham Borough Community, to name just three, who are looking to try to continue their record runs in the competition.
Yeah, a special mention as well to Stanway Pegasus, I think. I hope they do fantastically well this weekend, but you do fear that it's not going to get much better than their first ever game in the competition last round.
No, you're right. It was a terrific achievement. They're up against Haverhill Borough, and in their very first FA Vars game, they won 10-1. So, yes, if they do better that, they'll be some feat. It is actually the third highest ever debut Vars victory in the competition's 50-year history. So, an amazing achievement to start their Vars career in such a way.
A Vars career that you know, can go on forever and ever, can't it? Because there's plenty gaining new experiences this weekend, but also plenty too with vast experience already under their belt. Talk, of course, of past winners of the competition, so we've got a number of those as well, but also a number of illustrious clubs who've graced every competition of the FA Vars so far.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, so there were seven clubs who have entered and competed in all 50 of the FA Vases to date, and four of them are still standing in this second qualifying round. Hoddesdon Town, who won the very first FA Vars back in 1975, they're home to Wormley Rovers, and you have Sutton Walden Town also with a home tie against Stanway Rovers. Tunbridge Wells, they also have a home tie. They're home to Kennington, and I'm hoping to get to that game if I can. And then you've got, finally, Brockenhurst, who travel to Blackfield and Langley, looking to try and avenge defeat against them from 12 years ago.
Yeah, and that last one is quite a local game as well. We get quite a few of those local derbies and old rivalries as well. And old rivalries being rekindled, always a good source of a story. I believe from reading your column in the non-league paper last week that there's some 26 that have met before in this competition.
Yeah, so it's 26. So it sounds a lot, but out of 174, it's a very small proportion. But yeah, it is actually happening less and less over the years. But still, there's a lot of clubs there who have got the opportunity to avenge a past defeat. Roman Glass St George is a classic example. They have had to wait 41 years for the opportunity to avenge a defeat against Hengrove Athletic. Sorry, back then they were known as Bristol St George. I don't suppose there's anyone there at the club simmering over that past defeat, but it's still something of worth.
Yeah, I've not heard Badil and Skinner's 41 Years of Hurt song coming out as well for that game. But maybe there'll be somebody in the Roman Glass St George crowd that can record some sort of ditty and send it to us here at the Non-League Show. You mentioned 41 Years of Hurt there then for Roman Glass St George, but there's five clubs as well, I believe, that those wounds haven't been allowed to fester for so long because they get a chance for revenge just a season later.
Yeah, so that's interesting for those clubs. Worcester Raiders being one of them, FC Deportivo Galicia, if that's how you pronounce it. Milton Keynes Irish and Fareham Town. They're all the clubs that have got a chance to avenge that defeat from last season and they're all going to have a bit of a challenge because they're all having to travel. So it's not going to be easy for them to get that victory. But I'm sure last season's defeat will still be fresh in most of the players' mind.
Yeah, and of course, a wordsmith like you can't let an opportunity slip by. And I make mention, of course, of Penrith, who 71 Vars matches in, fill their R's hole, so to speak.
I'm glad you said that and not me. No. Yeah, so they've had 71 FA Vars ties in the past, but Leighton and Crookhaven Albion will be their first opponents that begin with the letter R. So just one of the quirky little facts that I dig out from time to time when analysing the Vars up ahead of the of matches at the weekend.
Now, most weekends, I always, in my head, I read out the football results as I'm reading them, even on Twitter. I read them out in the tone that I grew up listening to football results being read out. And I want to read out Penrith against a Wrighton and Crooker Albion because that's what the FA Vars is all about, those sort of ties. Very exciting weekend ahead. You mentioned there, Phil, that the game that you might be heading off to?
Yeah, I'm hoping to get down to Kent to see Tunbridge Wells. I went to Carn Town in the last round, so I'm trying to, if I can, get to as many of these FA Vars 50 clubs during this season's tournament, and hoping to head down to Tunbridge Wells as they take on Kennington.
Head down to Tunbridge Wells, then head back home, and then compile all the facts and stats from this second qualifying round.
Yeah, I don't think I'll be able to get them all done in the same evening, so it may spill over into Sunday this weekend.
But there's plenty out there, even ahead of the weekend. Your insight and knowledge about these FA Vars games. Just remind everybody where they can follow you, find out more stats and facts all compiled by your good self, Mr. Phil Annette.
Yeah, so I've produced a set of tie-by-tie facts and stats for a majority of the games happening this weekend. You can find those on my Twitter account, at FAVarsFactFile. Apologies if your club's not included.
I'm sure they've been included in the past, Phil, and everybody tips their hat and salutes you and gives a booming round of applause for all your work and hard work for the non-league game and all the FA competitions that heartily get your back in. Phil Annette's at FA Vars Fact File. Thanks again for joining us on the Non-League Football Show. Have a great weekend. We'll speak to you again soon.
Cheers, Tim. Thanks a lot. Bye.
Time then again to head on over to Non-League Paper Towels. Welcome back to the Non-League Football Show. It's Executive Editor at the Non-League Paper, Mr. John Couch. Welcome back, John.
Thanks, Tim. How are you?
Yeah, it's another busy week, isn't it? Another busy week. FA Cup weekend last weekend. The FA Cup third qualifying round draw in the week. And then we come to the first weekend of both FA Trophy and FA Vars action. On the same weekend, the first one of the season. Plus, there's all the usuals of the league programme. I'm juggling. You guys at Nonny Paper Towers must be... how many extra hands have you got?
Well, that's a very good question, actually. We're a little bit light because these bars and trophy weeks together are an absolute nightmare for us. It's a logistical nightmare, but we love it anyway. It's loads of football being played, loads of permutations everywhere you go, and there's some real cracking ties. Come Saturday night, I think we'll sleep well, but we're certainly looking forward to it.
It's always busy. Anybody that's involved in non-league, a Saturday's busy, but it just seems that this weekend's going to just far exceed all other expectations and permutations. Obviously, beyond the Vars and the trophy, we've got the National League clubs focusing on league action. And in that top tier, Chesterfield now have reclaimed the top spot after Barnet's defeat last weekend. Solihull still unbeaten in second. And we spoke earlier with Andy Wing about how that's all going. But 10 games in now and the table's beginning to take shape.
Yes, very much. I mean, you mentioned Chesterfield. They just keep doing enough, don't they? We were joking last week about the amount of late winners they seem to be having. And then again, another one on Tuesday night against FC Halifax. They just find that extra gear just when they need to. And that's that's a sign of champions, really. And I think they're certainly going to take some beating. I went down to Solihull. It was my first time there. I was very impressed with the way they played as well. And they're, as you say, they're 10 unbeaten now under Andy Wing. Well, having said that, AFC Fylde gave them one hell of a game. And how they're second for bottom, I'll never know. But it just goes to show how strong that National League is. I mean, Fylde on another night could have quite easily gone away and taken all 3 points. But it's so tight, and the quality at the moment is second to none. It's really building up into a decent race at both ends of the table.
Yeah, and as you say, both ends of the table. There's obviously sides that weren't in form at the start of the season are now coming back into form, or coming into form, I suppose, for the new season. Woking against York is Saturday's lunchtime TV game, set to be a cracker, that one. York having notched their first win under Neil Ardley earlier this week. But one thing I really noticed is that York face a number of those up the top in the coming week, so they can have a big impact both on both ends of the table. You know, obviously they're trying to pull themselves up and get themselves up the table. But I'm looking at York's fixtures. So as I say, they got Woking away this Saturday at lunchtime, midweek at home to Barnet, next Saturday at home to Solihull Moors, the following Tuesday away at Dagenham and Redbridge, the following Saturday at home to Bromley, then they got Eastleigh, Tuesday the 24th of October, away to Chesterfield. Neil Ardley's impact on the non-league game could become legendary.
Well, I didn't realise it was quite as tough as that. Well, I mean, I think they clearly sat down and had a look at those fixtures before bringing Neil Ardley in and giving him a couple of weeks before sitting down and facing tasks like those. I mean, it's you're right to say it's a big week for them, and they had a disappointing result in midweek as well, didn't they? So they've got it all to do, and that Woking game could be very interesting. Woking, of course, have been they've turned the corner themselves. They've just sort of crept up almost unnoticed, really, into the playoff position. Got held by Ebbsfleet 1-1 on Tuesday night, but when the cameras are down at Kingfield, they always up the notch, and I'm sure York will as well. So I think that will be a real humdinger. But no, Neil Ardley's certainly got his work cut out of the next few weeks. He's going to be earning his money, isn't he?
Yeah, he certainly will be. Beyond the playing side, obviously it's something we have to look at. Southend United's plight seems to it saunters along like a soap opera script, doesn't it? It's another non-court hearing this week that sees that one adjourned, and now the club face sort of back-to-back days in court. I think the 3rd of October, I believe, is with the electricity company. The 4th of October regarding the HMRC debt. All that and the consortium of local people are still waving in the wings. They're waiting in the wings, but waving as well, saying that they've made offers, but they've not been accepted, but they are still interested. I mean, we've had the latest episodes of the Wrexham documentary drop. I just wonder if someone's making a documentary on Southend and we don't know about it.
Well, that's right. It's the fans I feel sorry for. Mm. You know, they really have been put for it, haven't they? And, you know, just when there looks to be a ray of light, you know, something else turns up. I mean, this court case with the electric company, that sort of come from nowhere, really, didn't it? And then after that, obviously, that's been adjourned until I think it was October the 3rd. Mm-hmm. And then we've got this consortium, which appeared very, very positive news. Certainly they were talking a very good game, but as you say, you know, that seems to have got a little bit quiet again, and you know, and another day ticks, and you're getting ever closer to that deadline, and the fans are going for it more and more each day. And you just really hope that they can get something sorted. But if they do, it's going to be another one of those 11th hour last gasp saviours, which the fans love. But I mean, it's the it's a pain and the heartache that they have to suffer in the meantime, and unfortunately they're going through that. But what a great job their team are doing, by the way. I mean, another victory in the week against Maidenhead. I think they had, what, 13 players in total, you know, two subs and one that they had to have permission to do. Goalkeeper, wasn't it, David Martin? They had to have permission to drag him in at the very last minute. I mean, that's Water Rover stuff, isn't it? And
it's why the Rovers meets Rocky, great. Isn't it? Because they're on the ropes, and there's just blood dripping from their lips. Their eyes are swollen up. They can't see, but they're still going. And also, as you mentioned, the fans as well. It's interesting to note that whenever there's a big matter going on in relation to Southend, they're trending on Twitter. It shows the importance. It shows the backing of the club as the wider club. You know, the fans, the players, not necessarily the legal entity that's in this position, but the whole world of football is with them.
Yeah, 4,500 there at Roots Hole on Tuesday against. Against Maidenhead, who aren't the best travellers in terms of numbers on a cold, wet Tuesday night. And I think that just shows what those supporters are all about. And you know, they did the usual tennis balls, didn't they? If you saw a few tennis balls come on the pitch, and there was a dead rat, I think, or there was a toy rat or something. I saw, but that just shows the passion of the club that they've got, and just how they're feeling about the situation at the moment. But yeah, if they go down, they're going to go down fighting, aren't they? And I think the whole of football will just hope that something can be drawn up in the next couple of weeks, and I don't have to go through any more of this turmoil. It's heartbreaking for everyone, isn't it?
It is indeed, and yeah, one step below, and the early season elation for Scunthorpe United fans seemingly derailed. The statement from Chairman David Hilton suggesting more and more skeletons there are coming out of the cupboard in terms of inherited debt, and that he can't, or he won't be able to meet those obligations. And again, I understand that there's quite a hefty HMRC debt still to hanging over there. He has said that the club's up for sale, and he's committed to paying staff wages in the meantime to keep the club going, but it's not a great state of affairs. And again, I'd say, unfortunately, I don't think these two are the only clubs in non-league looking over that precipice. You know, they're just the two in the public eye. Of course, we've also seen issues arise at Enfield FC in recent weeks. I think non-league football needs to take a look at itself and make sure that it is self-sufficient, making sure it's living the long game and not just living on borrowed time.
Yes, that's right. I mean, as you point out, we've had the likes of Enfield. We've also had East Thurrock. I think there's been a couple of Step 5 and 6 teams that have sadly perished over the last couple of months or so. It is a tricky time. It's a time where people, you really do have to tighten your purse strings. The Scunthorpe situation is just a little bit uneasy with me, just with the way that they bought players in the summer. That they were very thrifty with their transfer policy. They brought me some fantastic players from bigger clubs than them, and they were the overwhelming National League North title favourites. They still are, probably. Obviously, no one wants to see a club go down. And we really hope, like Southend, that they can get something sorted. But that's the situation that's been brewing for a long, long time under the previous regime and with Mr. Hilton. And you know, as you say, a lot of skeletons are coming out of the closet, and it's ugly stuff. And again, it's the fans you feel for. I just hope that they can get themselves sorted, because again, it's another big club. That's a big club with a football league background and a football league history, and no one wants to see big football clubs and proud football clubs like Scunthorpe United go.
Yeah, it's going to be another one of those where I'm sure there's going to be lots more twists and turns. Talking of twists and turns, that managerial merry-go-round this week is like some sort of pass-the-baton game. I'm trying to write this one down, right? It's all change at Gloucester City. Non-league legend Stuart Fleetwood, he's left his coaching role, takes up the vacant head coach role at Southern League Premier South Swindon Supermarine. But also Tim Flowers departs as manager, along with his assistant Jan Klotsky. Then the incoming manager is no stranger to the club, Mike Cook. He's last in charge at Gloucester a few years back. Apparently, as well, he has the highest points per game tally of any Gloucester City manager in the last 25 years. That's an interesting little stat there. He's going to take his first game in charge on Saturday. They've got a long trip up to Darlington, where he's going to face another manager in his first game with his new club, Josh Gowling, who became the new boss at Darlington this week. It's... That's just one of that's one ride. There's other rides to come.
Well, with the with the VARs and the trophy games, as we were saying, we were trying to look at ways of best filling the non-league paper this week, and you only have to look at the managerial changes, and then all of a sudden that's job done, because it's been so many. It must be sort of that week where sort of chairman sit down and
it's that 10 game mark we always talk about, isn't it? It's ridiculous. Like everybody's listening to us. They've gone 10 games, right? Now we're making. I mean, the other big departure this week, David Unsworth from Oldham Athletic, 10 points in 10 games, just 2 wins and 19th in the National League, probably tells the tale there.
That's right. I mean, that's a football club who should be doing a lot better than they are. But well in the summer, or so we thought. Obviously, it takes time for it to bed in and to settle down. But it's, unfortunately for football managers these days, time is something they just don't have. And we were starting to get whispers that things weren't right at Oldham for the last sort of few weeks. I think the fans turned on David. David refused us an interview at their game on Saturday, which again was another sign that he was under pressure. And then 24 hours later, he'd gone. But Oldham, that's a big job, and there's some big names in the frame for that. And I think that's a very good job there for someone who looking to make a name for himself, because it's a big club. He's inherited a very good squad of players. Playoffs are certainly not out of the question just yet. There's still plenty of time for them, and they've got a passionate fan base that will really get behind him if he does the right things. And hopefully they can find a suitable replacement, because I think if they do, then I think there's still a very good football team to come out and to challenge possibly as sort of one of the late riders, should we say. You know, possibly a late push. I think Oldham are well capable of that.
Yeah, and you say they're a big club, and you know, a number of levels down, another big club, and another one I'm sure will be attracting attention. Bury Football Club parted ways with Andy Welsh over the weekend as well. That's going to be one of those where it wouldn't surprise me if somebody with Football League experience was prepared to drop down to take on that job in the North West Counties Football League.
Yeah, very very similar situation, similar to Macclesfield, as we've seen as well. You know, a big football club who are much lower in the in the pyramid than they should be. Andy Welsh, I mean, that's what you get for taking your team up to as low as fifth, isn't it? You know, I mean, that just goes to show the pressure he's under there at a big football club where expectations are huge at that level. Obviously, they've been through I've been through the mire a little bit, but they now are Unite, and you know, they're back at Gig Lane and they're enjoying their football again, which is great. But they're not going to enjoy their football unless unfortunately they win every week. And unfortunately for Andy, he's paid the price for not quite winning every week. There's going to be there's a big job in the waiting there for someone who either a Bury legend or a Football League manager looking to get back into it. And it'll be interesting to see just to it was just say a point there.
Yeah, there's always one club trying to. I wouldn't say is it outdo it. It's a while since we've spoken to Chris Monroe at Basford United, and this week is all change. Yeah, literally all change. Steve Kittrick let go as manager. Chris Monroe stepping back from his day-to-day input and role as chair, and the incoming chair, a non-league legend, I would say, Rudy Funk, and new manager James Jepson.
Yeah, Rudy Funk. That name always pops up. I spoke to Rudy a couple of times. He's a real character. He's great. And I saw early in the season that he parted company from, I think it was a team down in Step 5. I can't remember who it was now, unfortunately. But, I was a little bit saddened for him that another job went. But all of a sudden, he pops up as a chairman at Basford United, obviously struggling themselves a little bit, but a well-established Step 3 club, shall we say. And he's got in there, and within hours they brought in a new manager and a new assistant, and all of a sudden they've got hope again. And I really hope for Rudy, as I say, because he's a real character. He's a lovely guy, and I wish him all the best, and it'll be great to see how he gets on. Yeah. As a chairman as well, we'll be itching to get in that dugout. I know that for a fact.
It was Pickering Town in the Northern Counties East Premier that he lasted two games as manager this season. And again, if Hollywood's watching, you know, here's a man that's been in the non-league game for years. He then has only two games in, as you say, lower down as a manager before getting sacked, and then he pops up a few months later as a chairman at a higher level. I mean, it's got to be a film somewhere.
And I tell you what, if there was a film, there'd be no better star to play the role of Rudy Funk than Rudy Funk. He really would be. He's a great guy, and whatever happens after Basford, you just know we'll be back. But as to what capacity and where, who knows?
One other worthy of mention as well, returning to the dugout, the much experienced Russ Wilcox up at Gainsborough Trinity.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, another big club who did so well last year, lost their way a little bit at the start of this year. Only one win for them. They parted company with their manager at the weekend. But to bring in a guy like Russ, I mean, that's a real coup for them, and a perfect fit as well in many respects. And a bit like Basford, they're just struggling to find their feet at the bottom of the NPL Premier. But with someone like Ross in charge, you know what you're going to get. And I think that's a really good appointment, and I think he'll do very well there.
Yeah. One last sort of point of the week as well. It's sad to see a number of reports of fan player incidents at FA Cup matches this week across the country. Always difficult to police and also act upon with limited resources for non-league clubs. But surely nobody in non-league wants this sort of element into our level of football. We've discussed it before. It's probably for fans as much as clubs to self-police and discourage people from unsuitable language and behaviour. For me, banter and bravado, of course, so much part of the game. Probably a constant as much as shoelace tying and jostling at corners. We don't want to eradicate it, but it's for all of us to make sure it doesn't go beyond, and that we also don't let it and the management of it spoil our love for the game.
Yeah, it's a real shame that we're talking about this again, isn't it? I mean, this is something that that keeps popping up in every big knockout game, isn't it? Every big knockout round, there's always one incident. I mean, I haven't seen too much in the way of it, I must admit, but on social media, I've seen a couple of videos which makes you look and sort of scratch your head in disbelief. I mean, there was a big campaign, like Respect campaign, which the FA launched last year, and a lot of clubs did a lot of work to try and launch that campaign, and but sadly, it doesn't seem to have had an effect. And even though we're talking about very low rounds in the FA Cup, it just seems to be happening still. And which is a real shame because, you know, on a normal league night, you can bet your bottom dollar it'll go through, yeah. You know, unscathed and, you know, without a problem. It just always seems to be a big, whether it be FA Cup or trophy or a playoff final or whatever, it just seems to be that big game atmosphere that brings out and it brings out that element in a very, very small minority of fans, let's say. But it seems to spoil it for the rest of them, and I don't quite really know what the answer is. I think, as you know, good people like yourself who do so much to try and prevent it. I mean, unfortunately, you're powerless. But it's all we can do is just as the non-league neutral, just help and support people like yourselves and league officials, FA officials, to try and eradicate this as quickly as we can, because the non-league name is being tarnished a little bit, and that's something that none of us want to see.
I think that's the biggest issue. You say it tends to be the high profile games, and of course then it gets more coverage and more awareness of it, and I think it just needs to be, everybody needs to take responsibility, self-police it. If there is someone that's being a bit of an idiot, tell them they're being a bit of an idiot, and just get them to in a nice way and calm it down, or get the stewards involved, or we need to stop it before it becomes too much of a problem. And you know, we have got all these FA Vars, FA Trophy games this weekend. They're big events for the local clubs, local communities. We just don't want any more of these incidents, really. We have got all this league action then, FA Vars, FA Trophy, all those to be reported. What else can we expect to read about in this weekend's non-league paper?
Well, once you get past all the all the managerial departures and obviously looking forward to the FA Cup games, we've been speaking to Emly, who are the only Step 5 team left in the FA Cup, so we've got a nice piece with them. I've been speaking to Hamworth Villa, a very nice chap by the name of James Connor, who is a young professional at Millwall, but his career was blighted by injury at the age of just 22, and now he's now chairman of Hamworth Villa, who are one step away from equaling their best ever FA Cup record, and they're the highest they've been in their history, and they're on the wave as well.
I remember growing up on the touchline at Hamworth Villa. My dad and my granddad managers at Austerley FC. They're then in, I think, West Middlesex League, playing Hamworth Villa, and their rise is really is to be applauded, and they've got a great little unit going on there.
Yes, yes, they have. I mean, he was talking about it was him that set up the youth academy, and he said because of what happened to him at Millwall that he sort of fell out of love with the game, but now he's kind of reignited his passion, you know, and he's taken over from his dad as chairman, and they're really, really, really looking up, and it's a predominantly rugby area. It's just 2 or 3 miles from Twickenham, so they do have problems in terms of converting people to the round ball as opposed to the oval ball. But they're doing great, and it was a pleasure to speak to him. It was just a really nice, really nice club, and I wish them all the best, and we've got a nice piece this week on Newport Isle of Wight as well, who are struggling down on the island. There was talk of a merger between the three Isle of Wight clubs to create a Guernsey Jersey style force to be reckoned with. Look as though that's going to happen at the moment, and Newport Isle of Wight are struggling a little bit. It's a very famous name there, so we've got a nice piece on them, and of course tons and tons of FA Trophy and FA Vars reports. So busy week, but that's why we do it as well. That's why we love it,
and that's why we love you. John Couch, thank you for joining us on the Non-League Football Show. We look forward to reading all about it in the Non-League paper on Sunday.
Thank you, Tim. All the best.
And that then is it for this week. That's all we got time for. That's as ever for all of my guests. Thank you to everybody for listening. Good luck to everybody involved in various cup action this weekend. A big thank you for all of your support. Don't forget you can follow us and get involved in on social media at Non-League Show. Myself there at Tim Fuel, F-U-E-L-L. And you can find us every week on Audio Boom, on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Deezer, TuneIn Radio, CastBox, iHeart, Geo7, Listen Notes, Overcast, Podcast Addict, Podchaser, Radio Republic via your smart speakers and all good podcast aggregation sites. Stay safe, enjoy your football. Thank you and goodbye.
Jabber Production. JIBBA JABBA.